this morning is United States versus Schwanke.
May it please the court, my name is Robert Ruth and I represent the defendant appellant Scott Schwanke in this appeal. The question presented in this case today is whether Mr. Schwanke earned a obstructing enhancement when he fled prior to indictment, essentially at the point of a gun and after a harrowing threat of violence against his life. There are three main points that I hope to make today. First of all, the district court erred when it treated this case of pre-indictment flight under the same standard as post-indictment flight. In other words, the district court presumed specific intent in this case without evidence, without sufficient evidence, and without making a finding of specific intent. Second, that flight at the point of a gun is not voluntary. And third, that the unique facts in this case militate against a finding of obstruction. Now, the district court, the guidelines include application notes. And in the application notes, they list certain types of conduct that are considered obstruction. One of the types of conduct is failure to appear at a scheduled judicial proceeding. That's post-indictment flight. Because it is specifically listed in the application notes, all the court needs to find to make an obstruction enhancement in that situation would be that the flight was intentional. That's it. The court presumes specific intent to obstruct justice in that situation because it's in the application notes. That's what the district judge did in this case. She presumed specific intent to obstruct. But
she looked at a number of factors, right, that he fled before being indicted. He was aware during his stay abroad there was an ongoing investigation. He knew federal charges were a possibility because he initially cooperated with authorities in exchange for being released without formal charges. Right? I mean, those were all factors that she noted her finding.
Well, those factors don't really support the finding. I mean, they are facts that she pointed out, but none of those factors suggest specific intent to obstruct justice. And none of those factors go to the question of whether the flight was voluntary or involuntary. I mean, the bottom line for the district judge in this case was to say, you had other options. Mm-hmm. And it's true he had other options. But so did Mr. Harhart, that was the case of the gentleman who attempted suicide.
But the reason I think the court pointed it out was these options were more of a reality here because of the fact that he knew federal charges were a possibility because he had initially cooperated. I mean, I think that's why that was set out that way.
Right. Well, and there's no doubt, if he didn't know that federal charges were a possibility because he didn't have contact with the police, then that we wouldn't be here. I mean, there would be nothing to even talk about unless he knew that federal charges were a possibility. But the law, when you're talking about obstruction and the proof of willful obstruction, the mere fact that you know that there are federal charges forthcoming does not prove that your specific purpose in fleeing was to avoid those federal charges. He, quite frankly, the fact that he knew there were charges coming and the fact that he cooperated argues against specific intent to obstruct. He was cooperating. He was working with the police. And he only abandoned that course of action when Mr. Mishner put a gun to his head and told him that powerful people want him dead or gone, and then followed him to the airport. And quite frankly, Your Honor, what makes it most terrifying and what makes this case different than most other cases is that he didn't know if he could trust the police. He initially trusted the police, and he told them the story about Mr. Mishner. And then, mysteriously, Mishner got that information. He didn't know how Mishner got it, but when Mishner put that gun to his head and said, "Tell me what happened," and he tried to lie, he tried to talk his way out of it, Mishner called him on it. He knew what he told the police. And he confronted him with the story that he told the police. Now, in that situation, he's in a secluded area, a secluded dark park, I think it was. After having been, the commissioner broke into his house and took him there against his will and put a gun to his head and confronted him with the story that he told the police and then warned him that powerful people want him dead or gone. That's the context of this case. So we're not talking about someone who said, boy, I sure would like to avoid a federal charge. I think I'll take off. No, he didn't flee when he was confronted by the police. He confessed, and he told them about Michener. And he only fled after the gun was put to his head, and he was confronted with this harrowing threat of violence. So I can't stress enough the importance of where the district court went wrong in not looking for specific intent. She never talked about specific intent. She basically said, you had other options. Now, if we needed to prove duress, we would lose, right? Because in duress, if you have other options, you lose. So I'm not contending that there's duress here. I'm contending that this is a situation that, for all practical purposes, is the same as this Harhart case where there was a suicide attempt. Now, that gentleman had other options. He didn't have to try to kill himself. But he didn't see it that way, for whatever reason. And you know, that case didn't go into a lot of details of what his problems were. But the court said, look, when it's come to that, the attempt at suicide transcends obstruction of justice, basically. There are forces at work we're not prepared to say you had the specific intent to obstruct justice. Now, what's important about that case is that is post-indictment flight. That is the type of flight that's listed on the application notes where the court may presume specific intent. The flight in this case, pre-indictment flight, is not on the listed in the application notes. The court may not presume specific intent. The court has to find specific intent. And the court in this case said nothing about specific intent. But Harhart had other options. And the district court was not willing to forgive him for the fact that he tried to kill himself and basically said, it's all about us. It's all about this federal case. The fact that you were trying to kill yourself, no, we think you were trying to kill yourself to avoid this case. It's a very similar situation here, except that it was somebody else who was trying to kill him who put the gun to his head. I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Peter Yarosh for the United States. The case here is virtually identical to the Martinez case previously decided by this court and cited in the government's brief. The difference that the defendant wants to make here is that in Martinez, after receiving the threat from the Latin Kings, didn't show up for his sentencing. And this court said, that's a motivation, that's not the reason. If it's voluntary and intentional, then you've found the specific intent. Here, the fact is that the defendant knew he was going to be charged. He had been arrested. The court made that specific finding. It made all of the findings necessary to find it was voluntary and intentional to leave. What the defendant doesn't like is two things. One is that the court didn't use some sort of magic words, which is just not the case. It made the findings, the reasons why we would find something intentional. And the second thing he wants to make a distinction out of is that somehow this defendant's flight was done before the formal charges were filed. So in effect, what he's saying is if the defendant's more effective by leaving before the charges are filed, then you can't find obstruction. And there really is no distinction between the formal and informal charges. If the defendant knew that they were forthcoming and imminent, which is what the court found here.
Well, he's saying that, you know, this her rationale mainly was this options, that he had options, and that was how the court determined there was some intent or inferred there was intent without saying those words.
Right, and that's part of it. In other words, of the many factors that the court found was this fact of saying, and she even took that in consideration. She said, Mr. Schwenke, you know or you think that the government had a leak, or that the La Crosse PD had a leak, or whatever the local law enforcement was that had the leak. But you could have gone to the FBI. You could have gone anywhere. He stayed in the Philippines for a lengthy period of time, never making contact with any authorities, never making contact with his family, never making contact with anybody. This is really no distinction at all from the case in Martinez. And what the defendant wants to emphasize is the threat that was made to the defendant. And that threat only works if we have sort of a panic, instinctive flight from an arrest or something that's going on. Then we have a tendency to say, well, gosh, that's really not the sort of willfulness that we're talking about here. But instead, we have a long-term calculated attempt to elude law enforcement. And that's found out by the court's specific findings in that regard. And the mere fact that they didn't use the magic words, the court didn't use the magic words of saying, and therefore, this is willful, the facts that she found speak volumes, are screaming intentional, voluntary conduct. And that's really what we're talking about when we say willfulness, is that intentional, voluntary conduct. That was found here, and it certainly exists. The defendant admits that there could be no duress here. And that's, again, mentioned in the analyzing the Martinez case, because the question comes to, well, how is it that this could ever provide a defense? How could you ever claim that this is not going to be the reason, or this that you have another good reason? And that is really what he's doing. This is really no different than a situation where an abusive spouse claims, hey, I have lots of reasons for doing what I did. I was under work, excessive alcohol, all of the reasons they can think of. But we don't say, well, gosh, then you didn't have the specific intent to do what you did, because you did. And that's really what we're dealing with here. And that's why Martinez said, look, at your motivation is not going to be relevant. And we would contend it's not relevant here, and contend, more importantly, that the court found that he intentionally and voluntarily fled. The court has no further questions. The government request that the court affirm the court's order of conviction and judgment. Thank you.
You have 2 minutes, counsel.
First of all, the question isn't did he intend to do what he did. Of course he intended to do what he did. He intended to flee. But he didn't do it with the specific intent to obstruct justice. He did it to preserve his life. The second point I want to make is this business of voluntary. I cited, I think, a half dozen cases that talk about what is voluntary. And there's a big difference between something that is involuntary and duress. I mean, a gun to the head must be involuntary. I mean, it would be an absurdity to say that someone who does something compelled at gunpoint is acting in a voluntary way and saying, well, that's just the reason why you did the thing. Well, that is involuntary. And then my third point is that Martinez, there is a huge difference in Martinez, besides the fact that it's post-indictment versus pre-indictment. And that's not a distinction that I want to make a big deal out of. It's a distinction the court makes a big deal out of. If it's on the list, you presume the specific intent. Martinez never fleshed out the facts of the threat. It was just a vague reference to the fact that, oh, he felt threatened, or he was threatened by gang members. In this case, we have all of the specific facts of the threat, including the gun to the head, including the warning that powerful people want him dead or gone, and including the fact that Mr. Mishner escorted him to the airport. And then the government points out that he didn't have any contact with his friends or family or anyone back home. That's true. That doesn't prove that he intended to obstruct justice. That proves that he was still terrified. Even with a broken clavicle, he wouldn't call home out of fear that he would be find himself in trouble with Mr. Mishner. For all those reasons, I urge you to vacate the sentence and instruct the district court that the obstruction enhancement does not apply. Thank you.
And you took this case by appointment as well, did you?
Yes.
Thank you very much for your representation. You're fine.